1 year ago today, Brittany Maynard passed away. Now, while she was certainly one of many who passed away on that day, Brittany's passing was a landmark in the issue of deciding whether to end one's own life. It's an idea which, by a growing number of people, is referred to as death with dignity, while, yep, still others refer to it as physician-assisted suicide. But those two terms, in a way, summarize the debate, legal and philosophical conflicts that this issue creates for many people. With us now to discuss this, on its surface, a simple-sounding, yet tremendously challenging personal decision, is Brittany Maynard's husband, Dan Diaz. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
And let me give you a website that goes will take you further into the many elements and facets of this topic, compassionandchoices.org. And first of all, Dan, having lost, I think everyone listening, when an anniversary of a loved one's passing comes about, no matter expected, unexpected conditions, it's a tough day. So my sympathies, my prayers for strength for you on this. And, you know, certainly what you have carried on, what Brittany did in her final days, has led a lot of weight to this issue. And do you think a better understanding of choosing when to end one's life?
Yes, I think one of the biggest effects that Brittany had was to start this conversation, to make people aware. She brought awareness to just the topic of death. That is something that in our culture we avoid. We don't like to talk about. I think Brittany, in speaking up and in making the point that a terminally ill individual should have the option of requesting medical aid and dying, because in her case, the brain tumor would have ended her life in a brutal manner, and she simply wanted the ability to pass away gently, not struggling or suffering for the last few days or even weeks of her life. And so what I think Brittany did was bring to this conversation just the awareness and reinforced that it's okay to talk about this with your loved one, and then be able to decide in concert with your own spiritual beliefs, with the support of your physicians and family, amongst all of the options available, what is right for the individual.
I think one of the difficulties a lot of people have in looking at this issue, above and beyond just the element of death itself, is, again, like I said in the introduction, it's a death with dignity by choice as opposed to the more commonly used phrase physician-assisted suicide. That term suicide in the faith realm brings about a lot of concern and objection because for some, such as in the Catholic faith, suicide means, you know, the padlock to the pearly gates is on and you're never getting in. And people look at it in the faith aspect as the suicide. But legally, and it's been proven here in New Jersey with the case regarding Karen Quinlan, for example, and in Oregon, California, across the country, a growing number of courts are being called on to decide about this. Technically, ethically, and legally, it isn't a suicide, isn't it?
Correct. That term suicide does not apply whatsoever, and for the following reason. To say that what Brittany did was that she committed suicide, by definition, it would then be required that Brittany was suicidal. There was nothing suicidal about my wife. A suicidal person is a person who is making irrational decisions. They are depressed. They are despondent. My wife, Brittany, wanted to live. A suicidal person wants to die. And so Brittany was simply taking the control back from the tumor so that she wouldn't have to suffer needlessly for her last few days on this earth. And that is completely different than somebody who is suicidal, who is looking or wanting to end their life. Now, in regards to the topic you mentioned about the church, I am Catholic. I was an altar boy. Bishop John Cummings of the Oakland Diocese presented me with the Adultery Day Award, which is an award for your service in the Catholic community. So I'm well aware of the Catholic doctrine and the teachings there. But I have yet to meet anyone within my Catholic community that actually they agree with Brittany. I understand the leadership of the church and their position on it. However, in California, 60% of Catholics agree with Brittany that a terminally ill individual should have this option, whether they need to use it or not. It's up to them. So I understand the conflict that some people might have regarding their faith, but that is the strength of this legislation. It is an option. A person needs to apply for it, qualify, and finally be granted. So if there's an individual who says that because of religious reasons they would never pursue this option, this law does not affect them at all. They would never have to apply for it. But for those, like in Brittany's case, who recognizes her end of life would have been brutal if the brain tumor was allowed to run its course, she then has the option for that gentle passing.
Oh, Dan Diaz, remembering Dan's wife, Brittany Maynard, who passed away 1 year ago this week, by her choice and through her decision and through a process that four states so far have in place and more, including New Jersey, are contemplating. You can learn more about this issue, compassionandchoices.org, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. And in the state legislature here in New Jersey, in Trenton, you can look up the Senate Bill S-382 for the most recent effort to bring about this option. It's called the Aid in Dying for the Terminally Ill Act, which has been passed by both houses, if I'm correct on my research here, and is awaiting Governor Christie's signature. Of course, he's obviously busy doing brand building and running for president, but when he comes back home, when the inevitable becomes obvious to him, hopefully he'll be urged to likewise put this law as an option. And Dan, it's important to make note, too, that it's not, you referenced it on its surface, but it's not an easy process to qualify for this as an option for in your life and in your decision process. There are a lot of hurdles, a lot of things, a lot of checks and balances, I guess they would call it in the political world, that
correct.
To make
yeah.
sure that you're not someone who is irrationally acting to something that has a quote-unquote more rational alternative.
That's right. My wife, in applying for this, two physicians, independent of one another, have to concur that, yes, this person is terminally ill, but they're mentally competent. They know exactly what it is that they are applying for and, of course, the effect that it's going to have on them. There's a checklist of items that have to be discussed with that individual. And that's what Brittany received from the caring palliative team that was taking care of her, where it is explained to her all of the options that she has, including chemotherapy, radiation, all of the clinical trials that are out there. And it's only once the physician is comfortable that indeed the terminally ill individual has been made aware. And in Brittany's case, we received this medication in May of last year. Brittany died on November 1st. So you get this medication, you put it in the cupboard, and you focus on fighting. That's what you do when you have cancer. You fight. And our focus was on researching how we could extend her life. However, Brittany was wise enough to recognize, which is why we had to move from California to Oregon, she was wise enough to recognize that as a last resort, if it actually comes down to that, at least she has that control to pass away gently. In California, she would have suffered because palliative care and hospice, in her case, would not have been enough to keep her comfortable. The California Medical Association, by the way, they removed all opposition to this legislation, and they took a position of neutrality, and in doing so, they recognized that palliative and hospice care, in certain cases, for the most part, it's a system that people need to research and look into because it does work. Palliative and hospice care will keep a person comfortable. But in her case, that brain tumor was already producing symptoms, the seizures, the inability to sleep, vomiting for days. What was coming next was blindness. She would have gone paralyzed. And Brittany simply said, I don't want to die that way. I would prefer to die gently, being able to say to my family, I love you, and it's okay that I die now instead of have to suffer for the next week or two through those horrific symptoms. So, yes, the safeguards that are in place, Brittany felt extremely protected throughout the entire process. And those safeguards are appropriate. And you know, the program in Oregon for 20 years, that's how long it's been a law there, has worked as intended.
And you can actually say, too, that the program being how it's arranged would bring about some alternatives where maybe a person had not considered looking or was not encouraged to look at, and could be an answer versus the path that others are taking. It should be important. It's important to mention, too, suicide versus death with dignity. There are the number of suicides per year are 100 time plus multiple of the number of people who go through the path of the death with dignity. We're wrapping up our time with Dan Diaz, remembering his wife, Brittany Maynard, who passed away 1 year ago. And you can go to CompassionandChoices.org to learn more about the death with dignity law issue. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. So moving forward, Dan, it seems like based upon you've been working in Massachusetts, obviously you've done made tremendous inroads in California. It seems like wherever this topic is talked about seriously and analytically, more people are changing and agreeing, yes, that should be an option I should have, everyone should have. And as you said, as long as the system has its safeguards and there are no cracks or loopholes where people can dodge or medical profession can make a bunch of money off of, why not have it as an option to alleviate personal suffering and help a family avoid what could be a torturous situation watching a loved one go through what they would normally have to go through without this option?
That's right. The nationally, support for end-of-life options, medical aid in dying, nationally that number is right around 70%. So the public support is there. And as far as what you mentioned, the safeguards in place, I would argue that currently, without this legislation, that's really where there are abuses happening. Because most of the times, these end-of-life decisions, if a person is depressed, despondent, without this program, they take matters into their own hands. And then are they, because they are depressed, going and just buying a firearm? And with this program, I would say for the first time, the voice of the patient is heard. As soon as Brittany applied for and had this conversation, her medical team knew, her family knew, everybody was aware that she was the one in control of her own end of life. And that the ability for the patient to be heard is something that is important, because then the abuses and the coercion and all the things that the opposition talks about, all that goes away. I would say that right now, without this program, those abuses are happening, and they're happening, unfortunately, behind closed doors and typically as soon as morphine is in the house. Because then the question is, well, where the once that terminally ill person passes, I would say the questions would be, were those the wishes of the individual? How did they die? It's this legislation brings it all to the light of day. And in Brittany's case, like I said, the physicians, her family, and of course in her case, the entire country was aware that she was the one making the decisions and in control of her own end of life if she found herself in that predicament where she needed to use it. But again, she was in control from the applying to the final, the patient, and this is one of the safeguards, they have to self-administer. So the medication, Brittany has to consume that by herself. So from the application process to the final, if the person has to take it, that individual is in control. And I think that's the way that this issue needs to be looked at, that the individual is the person making those decisions for themselves.
Just to wrap things up here before, I know this is a touchy subject for you listening, but please learn as much as you can before you judge. Starting point in New Jersey, it's Senate Bill S-382. You can see what the proposed program would be structured as, much like Dan just described in Oregon, for example. And to learn more about the issue on a further level, CompassionandChoices.org. And Dan, having an understanding of what losing someone in a torturous process is like, Brittany is helping us understand how we should always be empowered as people, not just patients, and what you're doing to carry on that awareness, that education is a great tribute to Brittany. And stay strong going forward, because what you're providing the medical profession and the medical consumer is valuable empowerment. And I think that's what Brittany was really looking for, and you're carrying on that baton very strongly. Thanks for doing that. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much.